D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you live from Bridgestone Arena. Predators, Flames tonight at 7, pregame at 6 right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. But joining us on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, college football editor of The Athletic, Mitch Light, kind enough to join us on a Tuesday. Mitch, we finally have the college football playoff bracket. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. When you scan the field, which team, in your opinion, got the best draw, the best path to a potential championship game appearance, and which team might have gotten shafted a little bit in their draw on their way to the title?
Well, the way things shake out now with the injury situation at Georgia, I would say Penn State has a, especially for a team that did not receive a bye. I mean, Oregon would be a good answer because they're the number one seed and they have a bye, but that's the boring answer. So I'll say Penn State have to beat SMU at home, Boise State in a neutral field, and then potentially Georgia with its backup quarterback or Notre Dame or Indiana. So I would say Penn State, especially the way they played in the Big Ten championship game, obviously they lost the game. They gave up a lot of points, but they showed some toughness, came back, and made a lot of plays when it looked like the game was going to get away from them. So I would think they would feel pretty good about their draw. Conversely, I would say, Tennessee probably not in love with the way things worked out, have to go to Ohio State. I know it's not a vintage Ohio State team, but still traveling up to Columbus and then get the number one seed after that. And then after that, it might be Texas, who, again, we've seen them struggle, but one of the most talented teams in the country.
So Alabama athletic director Greg Byrne took to social media the other day after Alabama was left out of the field. And I understand he's biased, to put it lightly. And I thought he said something interesting. He wrote, quote, "We have said that we would need to see how strength of schedule would be evaluated by the CFP. With this outcome, we will need to assess how many P4 non-conference games make sense in the future to put us in the best position to participate in the CFP. That is not good for college football." Does Greg Byrne have a point, or is this just sour grapes?
No, I think – no. And this is not an original thought. I mean, they did not get in because they lost to 2-6-6 teams in the SEC. Had they lost at Wisconsin and had a better SEC record, then I still think it's sour grapes, but the point is more valid. They played a bad Wisconsin team that went 5-7. They played a South Florida team that just had to scrape to get to bowl eligibility. They beat Western Kentucky 63-0, and they beat Mercer. So I really do not understand all of the belly aching. I don't think I've used that term in a long time. Belly aching from SEC fans, SEC country, about strength of schedule and all that stuff. When again, it was Alabama losing to 2-6-6 teams.
But Mitch, wouldn't we say that is counteractive to the way the basketball tournament committee makes their selections, where strength of schedule is everything? They don't worry about the one loss record of a 17-12. But it should be the same principle to some degree, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should.
Because I could argue that at Oklahoma and this year's Vanderbilt team, yeah, they're 6-6, but that's in the SEC, and the strength of the SEC is the depth of the league. So that's not just any 6-6 team.
I agree. But as I was about to say, I think it was also a unique set of circumstances. I'll go back to my original thought. It's a different sport. I completely agree with you. There's fewer games of importance in basketball. There's far more data points in college football. There's fewer. I don't know if I'm making my point or contradicting my point, but there is differences in the two sports. And I will say, I think it was a unique set of circumstances where in future years, if it's a three-loss Alabama team with a similar resume versus a two-loss ACC team, that the SEC team would get it. I think really, and I'm obviously not in that room, and as I always say, there's 13 people with 13 opinions. But I think what it came down to is SMU losing in the championship game and the committee not wanting to penalize them for a good showing. I think if, 24-7 in the first, late in the second quarter, or whatever it was, if SMU got run off the field, Alabama would be in. But I think personally it came down to them losing close in the championship game and setting a precedent about penalizing a team for reaching its championship game and playing a 13th game.
We talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic discussing the college football playoffs. Now, Mitch, of these first-round games, which one would you consider would be an upset? I know we can look at the Texas and Clemson, but Clemson started to play a lot better after their loss to Georgia. So you could possibly look at that one. But out of the, you know, four games that would be played, which one do you believe would be the biggest upset?
I'm going to contradict what I said earlier about Penn State having a terrible draw and pick SMU. I had to make picks. You know, when you're brewing your brackets in the NCAA, you don't want to pick all favorites. Well, there's, 32 first-round games. In this, there's not. There's only four.
And you always got to pick the 12 over 5. There's got to be a 12 over 5.
I did not take the 12 over 5. I took SMU over Penn State. And I didn't just do it just to pick an upset. I really think it can happen. They have a very good offense. Kevin Jennings is a really good quarterback. Penn State's defense, I know Oregon's probably better than SMU, but Penn State just got lit up by Oregon. It was probably 2 or 3 months ago, but I remember watching the Bowling Green Penn State game. Bowling Green gave Penn State's defense fits in the first half. I really think they'll be able to move the ball. And while home games are great in the playoff, I think we might see if a favorite, and it could be work in Tennessee, Ohio State's favor, in Tennessee's favor. I think if a favorite, a home team, is struggling early, you get that nervous energy in the building, and Penn State fans like, it's, you know, we're losing to SMU. What's going on here? And I think it can, you know, James Franklin, obviously well documented his record in big games and all that stuff. So I think being the road team might play to SMU's advantage. I wouldn't be surprised if they won that game.
Now, which game is the most intriguing to you in that first round, those first round matchups? I look at the Indiana and Notre Dame game. That's an intriguing game to me. I know many people look at it and say Indiana didn't play anyone. When they did, they end up losing, and I understand it. But that game, if you watched it, it was probably a little bit tighter than what the score indicated. There were some special teams things that happened and whatnot. But I still believe Indiana is a damn good team. But people just automatically think that, oh, they're going to lose to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think there's two. The Ohio State-Tennessee game, I think, for obvious reasons, just two great programs. But I will go back to that game you just referenced. I'm interested to see Indiana in its like kind of second opportunity in a big game. Like they failed is a strong word, but they failed in their first opportunity against Ohio State. Notre Dame had a great run after the Northern Illinois game. Statistically, I think they lead the nation in total offense and total defense, maybe, or scoring offense and scoring defense, something like that since that game. But the schedule hasn't been great. And the USC with its backup quarterback, I know he beat out Miller Moss, but they moved the ball. They had some success moving the ball against Notre Dame. So, and Indiana's offense is very good. So I would pick Notre Dame here, but would not be surprised at all if Indiana really made them sweat. And I just think it's cool, too. You got two teams from the state of Indiana playing.
Exactly. What do you think of Indiana's quarterback?
I like him. I mean, his brother, Nathan Rourke, was a really good quarterback at Ohio before him. And, you know, he's had a good career. He got hurt 2 years ago. Took a while to come back. But, you know, that was a very good job of evaluating in the portal and picking a guy who they thought would be good for his system. I think when healthy, he's been very good this year.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. We're talking college football and the bracket. So, Mitch, philosophically, I understand why they have the bracket the way it is. They had to start somewhere with the 12 teams. But after what you see now, and you just were talking about some of the things you can poke holes in, Boise State getting a bye, Penn State looking like they might have an easier pathway to the semifinal than Oregon, arguably. Do you think that they will next year reconsider the reward for winning the conference, especially in these huge conferences where not everybody plays even, you know, basically play half the teams in these leagues? So what does it really mean to win the conference? The suggestion was made by the panel of just seeding them 1 through 12 and not seeding them by league champion. What do you think they will make that decision at some point?
Yeah, I do. I think that's I think it was in theory a good idea what they did, but this idea was crafted when there was five power leagues before the demise of the Pac-12. So it wasn't such a big two and other two type thing. So I don't think this scenario was really you know, they could envision this scenario where you have, and no knock to Arizona State and Boise State, but two weaker teams than some other of the at-large teams. So I think that's a reason we're seeing this. But I totally agree. I think winning your league and getting in is reward enough, but that they should honor the best, just go 1 through 12 and see that way. I think it will eventually go that way. I should know this. I think they can change the form of the teams after 2 years. I don't know if they're locked into this format for next year. Again, I should know that. They might be, but if not, I think they will change it.
This is the point that Nick Saban made repeatedly.
Repeatedly, yes.
Yes. Well, and this was one detail that I thought was a very good point. If you are going to put a bracket up every week in the weeks leading up to the actual bracket, just like Joe Lunardi does, he does every day, you know, basically.
He does bracketology during the offseason.
And this, look, I've watched him do it. I do my own research for that, et cetera, as everybody knows that's listened to me for a long time. But this is why I don't put the brackets up. I don't make a bracket when I'm looking at who's going to be in, because if you are going to put pencil in a league champion, then that takes up a spot. But we know, everybody knows that when you put that bracket up, it's not set in stone because that team has to win the league. So Nick Saban's point that SMU was ranked higher than they should have been because you had to put a team down. You put the leader of the SEC in the bracket when they had to obviously win the game to get in. So SMU was like, well, you ranked us eighth, so you're penalizing us if we lose this championship game. But Nick Saban was like, they really weren't the eighth-ranked team going in, but they were holding a spot on that board because they were leading the conference. I would suggest to the committee, if it were me, and they're not going to listen to me, they don't have my phone number or anything. Mitch, maybe you could give it to them if anybody wants.
Yes, I will.
My suggestion would be, don't put a bracket up. Just rank the teams 1 through 12 in the league in the weeks leading up to the actual bracket. There's no need to put a bracket up there. And that might have changed their thinking on SMU.
Okay. I think I can poke holes in both those. I mean, if you put
the
rankings up, everyone knows how it works, so they can just make their own bracket. Like, that's what we would do with The Athletic. We run every week. If you rank the 12 teams, I know that if you've got SMU the highest, you're projecting them to win. And I think if I understood your point and Saban's point correctly, that's not really what they did. They had SMU ranked seven or wherever because they thought they were the seventh best team. They had Arizona State and Iowa State ranked like 15 and 16 heading into championship weekend. They didn't rank them artificially high to get them in the bracket. They didn't need to. The champion of that league gets into the bracket. So heading into conference championship week, they had Arizona State 15 and Iowa State 16 or vice versa. And then Arizona State looked really good, and they moved them up to 12. They didn't move them up to 12 to get them in the bracket. They moved them up to 12 because they're the 12th best team. They would be in the bracket if they were ranked 14th still. So if I'm, again, interpreting it correctly, I think that has nothing to do with it.
Well, I guess then I will pin you down on why did the committee think that SMU was ranked deserving of the eighth ranking when they had not beaten a top 25 team?
Same philosophy with Indiana. They just thought, I mean, I'm not being a wise, you know, they just thought they were the seventh best team. I'm not saying I agree with it, but they, you know, it's very difficult to rank those teams this year because of those unbalanced schedules that you mentioned. The SMU did not play Clemson. They did not play Miami. You know, they did not play some of the top teams
Syracuse
in the league there.
So, did not play Syracuse.
Syracuse. I'm not saying it was right or wrong, but they had them ranked seventh because that's where they came up with their rankings. Like, in the whole, we even wrote about this. It's never going to happen. And say, you know, they're not going to stop doing the weekly show because it makes a lot of money and people like go crazy talking about the rankings. You know, I've been on your show for last 5 weeks. All we do is talk about the rankings. So I don't think they contrived anything with SMU because, again, if they were contriving things, they would have had the projected Big 12 winner in the top 12, which they did not do until after the championship weekend.
Okay, so in general, I believe that Nick Saban has some really good points, and he will be penalized, I think, in how those points go over because of where he sits with Alabama. And people are just going to say, well, he's giving Alabama's case. But I think he has some very good points, especially when we look at the perspective of how the basketball tournament is selected, that I do think that committee does need to sort of rethink how they do their process.
Yeah, I think it boiled down to SMU. If they were 11 and if they had two losses, it did not reach the championship game. Now that's a different thing because they would be third in their league. So again, that's a different point. I think it just boiled down to them having a fine showing and not wanting to be penalized for that. And I get the Alabama. I'm with you. I mean, I think the SEC is clearly the best league. It's the deepest league. And I know this argument doesn't really, a lot of people don't want to hear it, but don't lose to Oklahoma 24-3 when you know you're playing for your playoff life. And then Oklahoma, it's not like they were playing great late season. You know, last game of the year, I forgot where they go. They went down to – they got beat bad the last game of the year. I forgot who they played. But so it's not like you lost to a red-hot Oklahoma team.
Yeah.
And you know what's at stake. Don't lose a third game. I mean, it's easy for me to say that, but that's kind of, you know. So I have no – obviously, you can tell, I have no problem with the committee's decision to put SMU in over Alabama.
The getting beat bad by Oklahoma, that was a factor. Yeah. If it was a 27 freaky double overtime game, that might have been a little bit different. So
right, you can't look at that. You can't look at that Alabama Oklahoma game late in the year and say, "Wow, this team. I don't care. This team deserves to be in. I don't care what else has happened the rest of the year." If you're looking for a reason to put to omit leave them out of the field, you can point to that game.
All right, real quick, thoughts on the Georgia Tech Vanderbilt matchup, what can be accomplished for Vanderbilt? A lot of people, you look at this, they'd be 6-7. That happened a couple times under Derek Mason.
Yeah.
It looks better on the when it says 7-6 and not 6-7, even though getting to a bowl game was a huge accomplishment. But we also know that in today's bowl games, there's all kinds of X factors with people opting out, going into the portal, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's very big for the reasons you stated. There's a huge difference between 7-6 and 6-7. You don't want to lose end the season with four straight losses. I mean, big picture, should it take away from the things they accomplished? No. But again, there's just a huge difference. I heard Clark Lee in an interview said, we want to put a bowl trophy there. So I think you'll get a very motivated team, Vanderbilt team. And it's a fun game. I mean, both teams have fun offenses. Haynes King, assuming he plays, I think there's been some portal rumors with him, but I'm not buying it. I mean, you know, maybe I'll look at Twitter right after this and he's in the portal. I don't know. But, two really fun quarterbacks, and Georgia Tech has been good all year. The one thing that Vanderbilt has going for them, Georgia Tech plays really well against ranked opponents. I mean, look at Brent Key's record against ranked opponents versus unranked opponents. It's like almost better versus ranked opponents. So I'm half kidding there. But, really fun matchup. Both schools about two and a half, 3 hours away from Birmingham, so it should be a fun game.
Quickly, before we get you out of here, Mitch, because of the season Vandy had, did you see any bump with their recruiting?
Not really, because in today's climate, or it's been this way for probably about 5-6 years, mm-hmm. most schools have all their commitments in June. You know, that's when the official visits are. Most kid commitments are before the season started. I said this, I think we might have talked a couple weeks ago. Like Indiana had 23 commitments before they played their first game this year. Mm-hmm. So they weren't really, you know, it's usually the next year. You capitalize after showing the product on the field with the next year's class. Where it should help for them is in the portal. There's mm-hmm. proof of concept. You can't just sell them on a vision. You can say, hey, look, we won 3 SEC games. We beat Alabama. So I'd expect their portal class to be better, while the recruiting class was just similar to what it's been in recent years.
Mitch Light, college football editor from The Athletic, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Mitch, well,
hey, one more thing, guys. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Willie, if you want to take this offline and keep arguing, you know where to find me. Just give me a call.
Yes. I might just do that.
I'm here. Bring it on.
Are you familiar, Mitch, with the Rocks for Jocks class that Willie allegedly
taught
in school?
Well, what was
not
it?
At Vanderbilt. I've never heard of such a thing. maybe that's why I was never in the same class with Willie.
Mitch challenged himself a little more academically, apparently, than I did.
Hey, look where I am. Look where you are. So, okay.
Mitch, always a pleasure to talk next week. Mitch Light joining us from The Athletic. No Rocks for Jocks for Mitch. He didn't get
perhaps that. He took the Physics for Poets class out there for English majors.
Maybe
that
he
just
did.
Just needed to get the science credit.
I never heard of that class. Did they, this may be a dumb question, but I've never heard of that class in my life. But I heard a class like, all right, if you want an easy class, just take this class.
They get the nicknames for it.
Had the nickname.
Yeah.
I mean, I was not a collegiate athlete like the two of you, so I don't know.
The classic, though, is when you think it sounds like an easy class, And then you get in there like, whoa. like I had one person at Vanderbilt tell me, I signed up for astrology. And they were thinking astronomy, like, hey, we're going to go out, we're going to look at the stars, we're going to check out, we're going to learn the constellations and where everything is, you know. And he got in there, it was all physics and math. He was like, wait a minute, where's the planetarium? Where's the field trip? He was out of there after 2 weeks. Man. He goes, I'm dropping this class, man.
I'm surprised he lasted 2 weeks.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we're going to switch gears to the Predators. I had an opportunity. I love when I'm able to come here because I have an opportunity to talk to the players and Andrew Brunette before our show. I asked Andrew Brunette a question that I've been wanting to ask him for quite some time. We'll play that coming up next. Willie Dunick, Derek Mason, Adam Finkin, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.